Devils Productions presents The Great Deep.
Welcome to episode number 6 of The Great Deep. My name is Ryan Calder, your host for the show, and this podcast runs parallel to the music of The Great Deep album. So if you don't know yet, this podcast series called The Great Deep is basically an extension or further exploration of what the songs and some of the themes in the songs are about on the album. And in this episode, we are asking the question, how do you slay a dragon? So as usual, there's a blog post on the subject which you can read about, and the link will be in the show notes. I have a very imaginative and creative son, and so the blog post references our interaction over this question, but I also threw it out to friends and followers on social media, and here's what they had to say.
At the age of 13, it dawned upon me that slaying a dragon is really a concept for those people that live on the coast. You see, I grew up in the homelands, very, very cold in the Eastern Free State, and dragons bring about warmth and heat. Why would I slay a dragon, my brother? Why would I slay a dragon? The dragon is there to keep me warm in the winter.
How would I slay a dragon? I believe the answer is quickly and carefully, because dragons are dragons. However, I'm neither quick nor careful, so I would probably end up getting swallowed by the dragon, hopefully, as an alternative to getting roasted alive, and then I would be able to attack the dragon with a sword from the inside out, if I survived the swallowing. That is how I would kill a dragon.
Well, thanks to everyone who responded to our question, and I loved these answers, so thanks very much for contributing to the discussion. The idea of dragons and adventure is something that pervades childhood and has been in the narratives of people growing up for centuries. The nuances, however, of those narratives have evolved nowadays. For example, these days we train dragons, we don't slay them. But you know what I'm talking about. The classic kind of knight's tale is a courageous central character who has to rescue a friend or damsel from a tower of a fire-breathing dragon. So when I asked my one friend to contribute towards a discussion, he said to me, "You're assuming I believe in dragons." Now, there's no doubt that dragons seem to have gained a lot more airtime in recent years, from animation films to movies like The Hobbit and TV series like Game of Thrones. But I'm not going to go into a history lesson here. I'm talking figuratively about dragons. And in that sense, everyone is facing one. For some in school, it's the fear of standing up in front of a class to do an oral. For others, it's the enormity of having a conversation with a difficult boss. Then there's a whole bigger breed of dragon. Addiction, verbal abuse, domestic violence, divorce, racist talk and behavior. These are big dragons, and they are not easy to slay. As I said in the blog post, my son occasionally gets so caught up in the imagination game that it literally takes over everything. I have this recurring lesson going on in my head that children understand things intuitively, sometimes far better than we as adults do. So I take two things from this. Firstly, you can't kill a dragon by yourself. You need help. Especially when it comes to the big dragons. And secondly, you've got to nail that dragon at its most tender and vulnerable spot, the underbelly. The underbelly is often the place of answering tough questions. And I would say it takes two things: courage and surrender. Courage to admit one's own shortcomings, and surrender to the consequences of that answer. So, getting back to my friend who said I assumed he believed in dragons, I replied to him, "How can you not see? They're everywhere." And all of us carry these things way more on our own than we need to, primarily because we're too afraid of admitting our shortcomings, and we don't want to surrender up ourselves to the after effects of those difficult consequences. But I know for a fact that there are people in jail who are more free than people outside of it. And it's just not necessary. Rather, kill the beast before it consumes you. And as you've probably guessed, I've written a song about this. So here it is, broken down.
The music.
This song started with the bass line, and it's got obvious references to U2, that sort of Kenny Loggins guitar. And I was an 80s child when I was growing up. Also, Civil Twilight. I'm a fan of all those artists. But I'm also a fan of crossing over the genres of music. So, like the earlier DC Talk albums, which crossed over the divide of rap with rock, this song features my mate Sandile Kambule, stage name The MCK, who tells it like it is in the bridge of the song.
The lyrics. The lyrics.
The central idea behind this song is that people matter. When someone is in trouble, you go and rescue them. But it's also about facing your demons, facing your vices, and the things that can trip you up, and helping others do the same. So the second verse points to the fact that there's a purpose behind us being here. And we can't lose sight of the fact that our interactions with each other are not coincidental, because there's eternity at stake. I honestly believe and have seen that there's a distinct reason that we have the people in our lives that we do. They influence us, and we influence them.
Nugget of wisdom.
Max Lucado's book, called Facing Your Giants, offers some insight into one of the inspirations for this song, which comes out of the book of Samuel. The slender, beardless boy kneels by the brook. Mud moistens his knee. Bubbling water cools his hand. He is searching for rocks, stones, smooth stones. The kind that stack neatly in a shepherd's pouch, rest flush against a shepherd's sling. Flat rocks that balance heavy on the palm, and missile with comet-crashing force into the head of a lion, a bear, or, in this case, a giant. Goliath towers above them all, 9 feet, 9 inches tall in his stocking feet, wearing 125 pounds of armor, and snarling like the main contender at a Worldwide Wrestling Federation championship night. He wears a size 20 collar, a 10.5 hat, and a 56-inch belt. His biceps burst, thigh muscles ripple, and boasts belch across the canyon. This day, I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. Who will go man to man? Give me your best shot. What odds did Daniel have against his giant? Better odds than perhaps you give yourself against yours. Your Goliath doesn't carry sword or shield. He brandishes blades of unemployment, abandonment, sexual abuse, or depression. Your giant doesn't parade up and down the hills of Ila. He prances through your office, your bedroom, your classroom. He brings bills you can't pay, grades you can't make, people you can't please, whiskey you can't resist, pornography you can't refuse, a career you can't escape, a past you can't shake, and a future you can't face. How long has he stalked you? Goliath's family was an ancient foe of the Israelites. Joshua drove them up out of the promised land 300 years earlier. Saul's soldiers saw Goliath and mumbled, "Not again. My dad fought his dad. My granddad fought his granddad." You've grown similar words. "I'm becoming a workaholic, just like my father. Divorce streaks through our family like oak wilt. My mom couldn't keep a friend either. Is this ever going to stop?" When Saul and his men heard the Philistines' challenge, they were terrified. But what am I telling you? You know Goliath. You recognize his walk and wince at his talk. You've seen your Godzilla. The question is he all you see? You know his voice, but is he all you hear? David saw and heard more. David's first discussion, although it was about Goliath, was on the Lord. "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he defy the armies of the living God?" David shows up discussing God. The soldiers mention nothing about him. The brothers never spoke his name. But David takes one step onto the stage and raises the subject of the living God. He does the same with King Saul. No chit-chat about the battle or questions about the odds. Just a God-birthed announcement. "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." No one else discusses God. David discusses no one else but God. A subplot appears in the story. More than David versus Goliath, this is God focus versus giant focus. "For the sake of love, we go. There's someone to save and a beast to slay." Which brings us to our favorite movie quote segment.
This episode's movie quote.
This episode's movies. Quits.
Quote.
Quotes.
Say quote.
Quote.
Okay, try it again.
This episode movies quote.
Well, if you need some motivation, here's Brad Pitt in the 2004 movie Troy as his army is about to arrive on the beach. And it kind of sums up some of the sentiment in this song.
"Myrmidons, my brothers of the sword, I'd rather fight beside you than any army of thousands. Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions. Do you know what's there? Waiting beyond that beach. Immortality. Take it. It's yours."
Well, thanks for listening in, and that'll be about it for this episode of the podcast. And thanks to all our contributors. Don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'd really love to hear from you. And for more insights on the band and this project, we recommend you go straight to the source, ryancalder.co.za, where you can find all our details. Until next time, keep pondering the great deep.